Mikel Arteta's men are once again just 2 points off the top of the Premier League after dishing out another devastating Premier League defeat, with Newcastle this time brushed aside on a night where Georgie was the best and the truly world-class Saka scored again. This is the Arsenal Beat. Hello everyone and welcome back. I'm Mark Manbryans from PA and I'm joined by Art de Roche of The Athletic and the Sun's Jordan Davies to discuss another fine win for Arsenal as they beat Newcastle 4-1 at the Emirates on Saturday night. We also have another thrilling instalment of Guess the Gooner to come as well. Art, have you managed to come up with any names yet for our Harry Potter 11? That's my first question of the day.
Oh my God, this completely just went out of my mind after you mentioned it on Saturday. So unfortunately I haven't, but I'm still just like, I've got Crouch in my head, but I'm too tired at the minute to actually
I think the most devastating thing for me was having you come to the stadium on Saturday, and I was like, can't wait to talk to you about this. And I was like, what did you think of it, being a big Potterhead that you are? And he was like, yeah, they're all right. I mean, I'm going to have Nemanja Quidditch.
No, that was a good one.
Top tier.
Jordan, how are you today? Nice to see Arsenal win while you're covering a game for about the first time since 1996.
I know, the Jordan curse. I was just with Newcastle being the wind-up merchants that they are, I thought there was going to be another instalment of why is Jordan here. I think it was like one win in my first seven games, and that was quite depressing. But we're on the up, and I think the curse is broken. But I'm waiting for that to come back in an abundance.
That's basically like one win in your first seven games is like Les Reed, Frank de Boer territory, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Yeah, no. Yeah. Questions are being asked, and I'm in the hot seat under pressure. That's just what it is.
Arsenal. Let's start. Really, 2 points off the top. Arsenal again. Now they've closed that gap up again. Oh, they were top for so long last year, 290 odd days. I think it was, wasn't it? And I think that it almost saw hope turn to expectation in terms of the title race, didn't it? But do you think they're better suited to this role of being the underdogs and being the ones behind?
Yeah, I think there's a lot less pressure on their games. Obviously, as we mentioned, I think ahead of the Burnley game, they were playing after Manchester City and after Liverpool had played in midweek as well. So you almost know what you have to do anyway going into that game. And I don't know about you guys, but going into it, I was quite pessimistic about it being a 8 o'clock kickoff. I just thought it was a terrible kickoff time. But I think the club and the fans did really well to actually buy into what a night game can be. And I think you saw the impact of that straight away, even before kickoff. So I felt like, yeah, this kind of role as the underdogs puts less pressure on them, but also is allowing them to just be a lot more free in what they're doing, both on and off the pitch.
Jordan, do you think we talk a lot about the inexperience of this side, and they obviously pushed for a title last year, but will it suit a young group and a young manager that have never won the Premier League to actually be the, I suppose, the chaser rather than the chasee, shall we say? Another Harry Potter reference, I suppose.
Yeah, I do actually, because I think this time last season, I think they were 5 points clear of City, and that was when the nerves were really starting to kick in. And no matter what Mikel said, and no matter what the players said, they were petrified of that eventual City kind of big chase for Lyon chasing the gazelle, and eventually they catch up with them. But yeah, I do. And I do think it's actually quite nice. I know everyone's saying that Arsenal want to play before City and Liverpool and put the pressure on. But actually, I think this team are quite happy to play last. And there's no real pressure. And if City lose or win or Liverpool lose or win, I think Arsenal are more than happy to just kick into gear and play their own game rather than having eyes on other games or knowing that a team is playing a certain team. And yeah, I think Mikel looks a lot less stressed this year. I think after a lot of press conferences, he's just quite relaxed. And it's almost whatever will be, will be. And I think that suits Arsenal down to the ground, even though they do have a lot of experienced heads in that team, regardless of what people say about this being a really young team, the likes of Declan Rice and Jorginho and even Martin Odegaard to some extent. I think there is some real calmness in this team now, and that was shown against Newcastle, but and they were quite calm until the rout began.
I don't know if it's an Arsenal thing or a team's going for a title thing, but it felt very odd after the game. We stood in the mix zone and we were like, you know, Sheffield United next. It's a Monday night. It's Sheffield United away. They're fighting for their lives. It'd be typical Arsenal, but actually, they should be licking their lips really going to a place like that, shouldn't they?
They should be, and I think what actually helps them is the fact that it's on a Monday night, because you've got an extra couple of days to get a player like Jesus a bit more fit. Jorginho as well. We know he's obviously managing his minutes at the minute and had a cramp at the end of the game. So you'd hope those extra hours help them in every way possible. But I do think going after the Liverpool game, the big thing was, okay, now they actually have to put a winning run together. They're doing that now, and if they're serious, they'll do it again against Sheffield United. So I think it's one where you have to smell blood and just go for it.
I was telling anyone that would listen, and hopefully people are actually listening now, that we talked about the lack of savviness. I know Declan Rice spoke to us after the game in Porto and spoke about a lack of savviness. Then Arteta in his pre-match press conference spoke about needing to be streetwise. And Jordan, I think Jorginho basically proved that he can be both of those things on Saturday, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, yeah. And you can only kind of think, what if Jorginho had started the game in Porto rather than coming on in the last 10 minutes? I think he probably would have brought a bit of streetwise and a bit of savviness against a Porto team who were falling on the floor with every touch from an Arsenal player. He's such a valuable player for Mikel, and just when you watch him up close, especially against Newcastle, you see the influence he has. I know he put the ball over for Martini for that second goal, but just before that he was berating Saka for not doing the same thing, and he really drives that team forward. And as he did say after the Newcastle game as well, it allows Declan to do more Declan Rice things rather than just being another holding midfielder, which I think he's had to be in the last couple of weeks, and that does limit his game somewhat, even if he is an incredible kind of cleaner-upper of mess for Arsenal. But yeah, he just provides a real balance. And until Thomas Partey comes back, I can't see a reason why Mikel would suddenly bring Jorginho out, unless, as we've said, the fitness issues are a bit too much for him.
Thomas Partey, is it a bit of a misnomer really that playing Rice and Jorginho is defensive? You see what I mean? It's a defensive outlook. Actually, when you look at Saturday, it's no less attacking than if you just play Rice or Jorginho.
Yeah, the way I see it is just looking for even more control. You see when Jorginho is in there, Rice can go a bit further forward when he's defending, and that really helped Arsenal with their press on Saturday. But then also, when the ball's coming into Jorginho, he's just brings a sense of calm where he knows what kind of touch to take to maybe win a foul, calm the game down, or what kind of pass to make to actually change the tempo of the game. So it is maybe a more calm midfield, but I think it's one that works really well. And that's not to say the Havertz kind of Trossard thing should be dead, because I still think there's probably room for that at some point this season. But as Mikel keeps saying in his presses, it's quite nice for Arsenal to have different ways to not just attack teams, but also control teams as well.
Is that part of it, Jordan? Arteta needs to almost pick and choose when he puts Jorginho into that team, and the impact he has can fluctuate, I suppose, couldn't it?
Yeah, no, I think there's this myth that Jorginho can only be used in either big games like against Liverpool when they need more control or when there's a bit more dominance. I do think he can play in most games. It's just about having the legs and being up against a midfield that is a bit quicker or with a faster pace. You kind of want more Rice and Ødegaard and maybe Havertz in there and a bit of physicality. Jorginho isn't the tallest of players. But I do agree that I think it's going to be vitally important for them to manage his minutes, his impact. And also, he is a great bench player. I know players don't want to hear that, but he is incredible coming from the bench. And the amount of times he's come on, barring Porto, and either seen out a game or helped Nicolaite win, I think he's crucial. So actually, he's such a useful player for Mikko in so many ways. And as long as he stays fit, it's a great weapon for Mikko to have.
We talked last time, when you, myself and Kai were on, about Leandro Trossard and that signing in January and how he added something to the squad. Jorginho very much in that same camp, isn't he? Just adding something that maybe was lacking when Arsenal were going for that title last year. And I know he came in January, but do you see what I mean? He definitely has added something on and off the pitch, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's a very different sort of thing that he's added. And it's, I guess, a sense of leadership that wasn't really there in the first half of last season. I know Arsenal didn't go on to win the league, but you still saw his influence in games like the Newcastle away game. Even, I'm not sure if you guys remember the Manchester City home game, where Thomas Partey was injured and he started. And I think everyone externally was having a meltdown because they just didn't think he'd have the legs to do it. But even though Arsenal lost, he was one of the best players on the pitch. And then his Aston Villa game, which everyone remembers the goal for, but I actually think he was Arsenal's best player even before that moment. So you've seen, I guess, little things like also him actually running down the touchline when he's on the bench, as Jordan mentioned, to whisper things in his teammate's ear, a little pieces of advice. And I think that business done last January, you could see it wasn't fully long-term thinking, but in the medium term, I think those two signings have done very well. And to add to that, Jakub Kivior's now performing quite well at left back when he's not being asked to tuck in, to just actually play as a defender. So I think a year in advance, all three of those signings are looking quite decent.
It was like a perfect set. You teed me up nicely there, Art, because I was about to talk about Jakub Kivior. Jordan, you said to me as we were walking out on Saturday night that he's probably earned himself a bit of a stay of execution. You were pitching him as maybe someone who'd be sold in the summer, but he's actually come in and hasn't really done anything wrong in an unfamiliar-ish role for him in that side.
Yeah, I did kind of fear for him against Fulham when he kind of didn't see out the whole game and Arsenal were pretty poor, one of their worst performances of the season. I did fear that Arteta would then be looking at him as someone who he could maybe offload, maybe even in the January, but definitely in the summer. But he's just been a steady Eddie, really. And as Art said, he's being asked to play as a left-back and do left-back things, which he's quite good at. He's not Zinchenko. He's not Ben White on the right who can come in and play in midfield. And I think actually that's quite useful for Arsenal, because I think sometimes when if they try and do two inverted or they try and do it at the same time, it can get a bit mangled and you're asking quite a lot of Saliba and Gabriel. So just to have him there as a traditional left-back is crucial. But I wouldn't say that he's a boring player who can't kind of run down the line, make those passes, kind of get forward and score from corners, as we saw against Newcastle. I think he is adding a lot more strings to his bow, and Mikel will maybe be thinking next season this could be a really good squad player rather than how much can I get for him.
Oh, I think you're a bit of a Kivior stan, so sell him to us. Sell him to those that might still be on the fence.
Well, obviously, the main thing with any Mikel Arteta player is versatility, which he's shown that he's got. And I guess what may go under the radar is his pace as well as his size. When you see a lot of the goals that Arsenal concede in earlier in the season down that side, it was a lot of the left back, who was normally Zinchenko, just backing off his winger, not really engaging. Whereas Kivior, with that size and also with that pace, is able to recover well, but also just put his body in front of the ball and a lot of the times that kind of deals with the situation. But also, I think what's really starting to impress is his passing range as well. I guess you guys saw it in Porto, the passing behind for Martinelli, which maybe he should have done a little bit better with. Yeah, I think, as Jordan said, when you're looking at a squad going for a title, those sorts of players who you can depend on to have at least a 6 or a 7 out of 10 are worth their weight in gold. So hopefully going into next season as well as the back end of this season, he can be one of those guys.
Is it a bit of a hashtag unpopular opinion, guys, but Zinchenko being out of that team, could it potentially have helped us a little bit? We've now seen Ben White having that inverted role and being very good at it. And as you say, that left-hand side, without wishing to demean what he's doing, is much more solid, isn't it, with Kabil, especially defensively, Jordan?
Yeah, I think accidentally, Mikel, I think he always knew that Ben White could do what he's doing right now, but I guess he just wanted him to focus on that link-up with Saka down the right, which was always so important. But I think he has accidentally realised that Ben White can do pretty much anything in certain games. That's really important. And I think he's always known that Zinchenko's been limited defensively and he's not great on one-on-ones. And you just think of Anfield against Salah and that was sort of down to him. It could be a blessing in disguise whereby he sticks with Kirior for the next couple of games, even if Zinchenko comes back into the squad, which he probably will do in the next week or so, and then just wait for Timber. And then when Timber comes back, you kind of have a choice to make, but it's a really good choice for Arteta because then he's got three, possibly four options because Tomiyasu can play there as well. And for a long time, we've been saying that left-back is a real problem area, especially with Kieran Tierney not kind of improving as much as Arteta would like. But now they've pretty much got four options, which for Arteta's flexible formation and wanting fullbacks to be not fullbacks, it's really good for him.
Oh, a bit of a conundrum for you here. If you had a fully fit Tomiyasu for Sheffield United away, would you play Kivior or Tomiyasu?
Oh, wow. I'd probably stick with Kivior. It'd be a bit harsh to take him out of the team, but with the vision of giving Tomiyasu some minutes in the second half, because again, I reckon he'd probably be an even better fit in left back just because he's got a bit more to his game than Kivior. So further down the line, I would probably like to see him a bit more. We've spoken about how good Kivior's been. And one thought I had during the game was, Arsenal are playing so well, but you don't just stay in the team if you're just an average Joe. Like, he must be doing something well to keep his spot there. So it is nice to see that with games, he's been able to develop some confidence, because I think it was, well, one thing that he may have been short of is just wanting to back himself in certain situations. Because we saw last season when he was playing centre-back on the right side, how good he was as well. So it's nice to see he has some confidence to do similar things at left-back.
Jordan, you mentioned there, like, a bit, not looking into it, because that's not fair on Arteta in the slightest, but they had these injuries to some key men, Tomiyasu, Timber, Zinchenko, Jesus, there's probably more I'm forgetting, but with them absent, he's realised and utilised Ben White more as that inverted right-back. He's playing Kivior more. We're seeing Jorginho in the team. We're seeing Havertz through the middle and actually playing well. Sometimes, almost not having a selection headache and being forced into things, it can work in your favour, can't it?
Yeah, and I think Arteta this season has been more willing to experiment. I think last season with the injuries, he said, right, I'm going to stick for a formation, stick with my team, and that's going to be it because I want solidity. And because they were top of the league, he didn't want to change too much. Whereas I think because the pressure is slightly off this season, I mean, the pressure's still on to win the league, but they haven't been top for over 200 days. And yeah, I think it's given him license to experiment. And Arteta loves to experiment. I mean, he's a disciple of Pep, so he loves to try crazy and wacky things. But I think it's come up trumps, and it will do. I know we're looking at this season and Arsenal fans want to win the league this season, but looking ahead to next season and the season after, I think it's really benefited Arteta as a coach. I think he now knows that he can experiment and he has players who can play in different roles. And I think he's also learned to just trust other players. I think he's now got full trust in Havertz. He's got full trust in Trossard to do the job when he comes on. Jorginho, the same. Even Martinelli and Saka coming through their blips. I know a lot of people are calling for their heads and saying they weren't doing enough, but they've proven that they can come through these tricky moments. So, yeah, I think, ironically, Arteta will be a better coach and Arsenal will be a better team because the likes of Partey, Jesus have been absent for so long.
Oh, if you took, I suppose, take the Champions League defeat away from it, the Premier League's going really well at the moment. What would be your biggest concern in terms of what could cause a blip or for the wheels to come off? What do you think would be the flashing red light?
For me, it would be if I saw as passive a performance as the one in Porto again. That just felt like, again, I'm not sure if you guys disagree or agree, but it didn't really feel like they went out there to win.
Yeah, I agree. Game. I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
It felt like they were just going there to go through the motions and then win it in the second leg. I fortunately don't think that will be the case in any of the games because obviously in the Premier League, you have to win. So I think the main thing I'd be looking for is not the exact same intensity as we saw against Newcastle, but a similar sort of drive in those games and just a real attention to detail where every pass you can see it matters. None of those kind of just lazy, oh, I'll put my foot on the ball, see what's going on. Nothing's really going on. I'll just pass it back. None of that where it allows the game to kind of get into a boring kind of rhythm. So yeah, those would be the worry signs for me if they kind of creep back in.
We didn't do a post Porto pod because of different travel plans and everything. But Jordan, that performance was quite it was as disappointing a performance as the look on Kai's face when he ordered a bowl of chips after the game and got bought a bag of crisps. But do you think that was maybe Mikel overthinking it and thinking let's go there and stay tight rather than thinking let's go there and play, let's be Arsenal? Do you think maybe that Champions League thing in his head it is a real thing?
Do you know what? I disagree. I think Arteta went there with every intention. I think he put out a team capable of comfortably beating Porto. I think the players turned up and in the first 5 minutes almost themselves realised, wow, then this is the last 16. We're on a big stage. We're against a really tough Porto team. And Porto really, really pressed them high in the first 5 minutes. And we can debate about whether the pitch was watered too much and the passes were zipping around and Declan Rice getting booked as a result in the first 65 seconds. But I think that was completely on the players. I think they were a bit rabbit in headlights the first 5 minutes. And then when it didn't go well, they kind of resorted back to let's just not lose this first half and then let's not lose the second half. And had it been 0-0, we would have been calling Arsenal very, very mature and saying it was a brilliant away day Champions League performance. But
who needs Jorginho? We'd have been saying, wouldn't we?
Who needs Jorginho? Sell him. But no, I don't think it was Arteta at all. I think it was just the players had one of those games where they got in their own heads a bit and Arteta couldn't really do much, regardless of if he brought on Eddie and Reece Nelson. I don't think it would have impacted it too much.
The flip side of that art and responding to something, I think, was arguably what we saw on Saturday, wasn't it, with what happened at St James's Park and the recent performances and results against Newcastle. We've seen it this season now with West Ham, with Forest and now Newcastle, where if these players feel they've got a point to prove, very, very often they'll go out and do it, won't they?
Yeah, you saw, I'm not sure if you guys saw, but in his TNT interview afterwards, Ødegaard was asked, was it about Porto? And he actually did bring up, well, it was Newcastle away as well. So I do think there is slight, I guess, vengeance that Arsenal do look for when they feel like maybe they've been hard done by or they've just lost the game. They need to win again. But I do think they are a team who do really thrive off emotion as well. And Saturday was just the biggest example of that, because I think I mentioned it to Claire afterwards. I don't really remember the stadium being like that for a while, in terms of just full energy from start to finish. Probably go back to some point earlier this season, maybe, but definitely not at that level. So, yeah, I reckon when they have something to play for, something to prove, it's good. It's a good thing.
Also, just to finish that subject, Newcastle were absolutely crap, weren't they? Guys, that sets us up nicely, I think, for another instalment. I think, Jordan, is this your debut on Guess the Gooner?
This is my debut, yeah. I've been thinking about it non-stop throughout the podcast, and I'm beginning to sweat.
Well, it's okay, because Art might be amongst the worst players we've ever had, so you're okay. No pressure on either of you here, but I'll quickly run through the rules. I'm going to read out a list of clues and facts about a former or present Arsenal player, and it's up to the guys to shout in if they think they know the answer. Last week, I think Simon Collins needed just two clues. So again, absolutely no pressure to live up to that expectation. But let's give it a go. Good luck, Jordan. Good luck, Art, as we play Guess the Gooner. I scored 30 goals in 118 appearances for Arsenal.
Sami Nasri.
Incorrect.
Okay.
My overall Premier League goals total stands at 65 goals, 322 appearances across four different clubs. I also scored 16 goals in 42 senior caps for my country.
Yossi Benayoun?
Incorrect. But I'm liking it. I like it. I like people that guess all the time.
Okay.
Even if they're wrong. No offense. No offense, Jordan. You see it there.
Yeah, sorry. You wouldn't have. I'm
waiting for a one hit. Just win.
I have two League Cup winners' medals and two FA Cup winners' medals. One of my middle names is Tacky.
Fuck.
I made my Arsenal debut in 2014 and left the club in 2019.
Matthew Debushi.
Incorrect.
The scoring record, I keep forgetting.
I still play in the Premier League and have scored three goals so far this season.
Oh my God.
Just to tell the viewers that my mic is working. I just haven't said anything. Jesus.
It's not Jesus, no.
It's not.
I famously scored a winning goal to knock my former team out of the FA Cup.
Oh. I'm such an idiot. Danny Welbeck.
Danny Welbeck.
Oh,
that guy was
me.
I think it was on the tip of Jordan's tongue, to be honest.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't. I can't believe I was that bad. I've listened to this podcast and lamented people for getting it wrong or just not guessing. And there I was doing an after-minute porto, freezing under the pressure.
You needed Jorginho just playing alongside you, man.
I did, yeah, just to...
Wow. Jordan Davies lacks Guess the Gooner savviness.
Well, I kept forgetting about the first clue, so that's why my guesses were so rubbish.
Matthew Debushi scored, 16 international goals?
Because no, I was like, 2014, who joined that summer?
Yeah, I was going through every player that went and not thinking Danny Welbeck.
Yeah. Well, because he was like right at the end of that summer, so I think
he was.
I just forgot him.
There you go. Gone but not forgotten, Danny Welbeck. Still actually playing and scoring in the Premier League, but we remember all the others, but not Danny Welbeck. And on that bombshell, thank you to Jordan and Art for joining us today. We'll be back on Thursday to preview that trip to Sheffield United. But until then, stay safe, everyone.